In this episode, I'm really happy to share with you my conversation with Tick Maynard. So Tick is a renowned equestrian from Canada. He represented Canada in the modern pentathlon at the 2007 Pan American Games, and he's competed at the advanced level in three-day eventing, holding long-listed status for the Canadian team. Tick has also won the freestyle twice at the Thoroughbred Makeover, and he judged the competition once. He's a trainer and author of two books, In the Middle of the Horseman and Starting in the Middle, and he's known for his expertise in horsemanship, eventing, and colt starting, notably winning the Road to the Horse colt starting competition twice. Now, Road to the Horse is an intense competition where horses are started with minimal time over 3 days. It's not something I really agree with, but it does take some pretty amazing skills, and we're going to talk about all of that. So he currently runs Copperline Equestrian with his wife, who is also a professional event rider, Sinead Halpin. And Tick and I are practically neighbors. We live just a few miles apart on the same road. And so I'm lucky to have spent a little time with him and a couple of his horses, and he's helped me with one of mine. And I've been wanting to have him on the pod for quite a while, and finally made it happen. So we'll talk about how he got into horsemanship, and what made him decide to do Road to the Horse, what he learned from the process of preparing for it, and how it's influenced his training since. I think you'll really enjoy his positive and balanced perspective. So here we go, episode 240, A Conversation with Tick Maynard. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Tick, thank you so much for coming here and being on the pod.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Karen.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough, I live right down the road from you, and it's a very stormy day all of a sudden, so it might get quite dramatic with the thunder and rain in the background.
It might get a little thunder in the background. Yeah, I had to kind of cover my head with my jacket as I was running in, in here. But you're just, I think, four or five miles down the road, yeah. So it's pretty convenient.
Yeah, so I'm happy to have you here. It's always fun when we get together and talk about stuff, and I'm always thinking, he's just down the road. We should be talking and getting together much more. So anyway, this is a great excuse to have a conversation. I wanted to start, you know, you come from an equestrian family and competitive background, and then at some point, kind of like myself, ended up doing natural horsemanship and kind of going down these other roads. Can you give a little story about, like, how did you end up making that shift?
Yeah. From what I've seen, a lot of people, I wouldn't know the percentage, but I've seen a lot of people that get into natural horsemanship because they have a problem that they want to have solved. You know, they've got a horse that's running over them, or a horse that's scared of them, or they're having some particular trouble with something. And that wasn't really the case for me. It was almost just kind of a coincidence or fate. And I was out looking at some horses that were for sale in British Columbia, where I'm from, out near Abbotsford. And one of the horses that was for sale was at Jonathan Field's barn.
I was just going to say, that's where Jonathan Field lives.
And Jonathan Field doesn't sell a lot of horses. That's not really his thing at all. He just happened to have this horse for a friend of his that was for sale. And we went out there to look at it, and he was still working with another horse, a little quarter horse called Hal, which you might know.
I know Hal.
And it's the first time in my life that I'd ever seen somebody do that kind of groundwork and that kind of liberty before. And it was probably in 2008 or 2009. And I can still remember watching that so vividly. You know, I just remember getting goosebumps just seeing that. And not only was the horse so well trained, you know, when Jonathan walked, the horse walked. When Jonathan stopped, the horse stopped. But also both him and the horse had such a warm feeling. You know, it didn't look like anything was forced. It looked like the horse was enjoying himself. It looked like the horse wanted to be there. And the connection that he had with the horse was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. You know, it really brought to mind that idea of, you know, birds that fly together or fish mm-hmm. that are in a school together, and you almost can't tell who the leader is. Like, they both seem to start at the same time and stop at the same time and raise their head at the same time. And, you know, just after that day, I didn't really even know what I was seeing, but I just remember thinking, I want to know more of what he knows. I want some of that, you know? And it wasn't immediately that I got involved with learning more about natural horsemanship, but that was sort of the first kind of step in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting that it just happened by accident, because I kind of stumbled into it also. I also got into it not because I had a problem. I just had a retiring Grand Prix horse with some soundness issues, and I wanted to learn some cute, fun little tricks.
Was there a moment like that for you, like a person or an experience or a horse expo that you went to?
Yeah, well, this one, I literally just saw a flyer for something called a Pirelli clinic, and there was a horse standing on a pedestal, and I thought, oh, there's a cute, silly, fun trick. So I went to a clinic which happened to be taught by David Lichtman.
Oh my God, that's a good first experience.
And I talked my way into the level. There was a level one and a level one advancing. And I was like, can I please, I'm like a Grand Prix rider. Like, can I just do the advancing one also if I'm going to bring my horse all the way there? And they let me in. But the moment for me was one of the first exercises of the first day of the clinic, where it's basically friendly game, right? So they're swinging the stick around. And this horse was pretty bomb-proof, pretty shut down, used up kind of horse. And he had been willed to me, so I had this horse. And I remember, you know, swinging the stick around, and the horse was just inching forward. But he was a really low-energy horse, and it was the first time that it was explained to me that that was tension showing up. And I thought, this horse isn't tense. He's like bomb-proof. But sure enough, every time I moved the stick, he kind of got robotic and like, I think I'm supposed to move. And it just, the idea of looking at that and seeing it as tension and a little bit of confusion, and it just broke my heart. I'm like, how did I not see that? Totally blew everything away. And so when I just played with that and with the intention of, I need you to be okay. And then he relaxed, and it began this process of him relaxing more. And then the energy came out. And then here was this like retiring, barely sound horse who started giving me more than he ever had. And I went, like, I was not looking to improve my dressage. I thought, how can this help me improve my dressage? And it did. And I went, oh.
I've found the same thing. I've found some of the biggest learns that I've had in dressage. And for the people that are listening that don't know, I'm a 3-day event rider. So show jumping, cross country, and dressage. Dressage is pretty important for what I do. Not on a Grand Prix level, but you know, on the level that's needed for eventing. And some of the biggest sort of learns that I've had have been from doing groundwork and doing Liberty and watching in a really particular way how a horse moves. You know, are they crossing with their front feet? Is the shoulder coming towards me or away from me? Are they, you know, in a what kind of balance are they in? Are they swapping leads at the canter? And being able to really see that, and then secondarily when I'm on the horse, being able to feel it. And I think some people maybe learn better when they're on the horse, but for me, my best way of learning is watching. You know, reading, yes, listening, yes, riding, yes, but watching is really my best way to learn. And when I'm learning something new, if I can watch it happen or have somebody else do it with my horse or ride my horse and I can watch it, I really appreciate that. So for me, that's one of my favorite things about groundwork and Liberty is being able to see everything right there before I have to feel it later from their back.
Yeah, absolutely. And in watching people like Jonathan Field, who, you know, was in the circle of the first people that I saw in the natural horsemanship world also, and the seeing that connection and the communication, and then practicing at Liberty where you really need to have the communication, right? And watching the horses' bodies. And I remember the first time I was working on like close circling at the canter at Liberty. And then I remember my horse like really starting to get it and hook on, and then watching his body change. And I'm sitting there staring at him going, well, now he's in the posture that I'm using all these aids to ask for when I'm doing canter pirouettes. But I'm like, he's just doing it because he wants to, and he understands. And so he's organizing himself. And that was another like mind blowing and very humbling moment to go, oh, I'm not really needed here. Like when I'm riding with all my fancy techniques, I need to make sure he understands and he wants to.
Yeah.
And then you get like 80% of what you're looking for.
Yeah. That idea of understanding, I think it's probably possible to go through a whole life with horses or train a horse from when they're very young till they're 8 years old or 10 years old. You have a horse their whole life. And I think it's possible to just be doing all that with managing your horse and them never really truly understanding. And that idea of having them really understand was probably one of the biggest turning points for me as well. You know, do they really get it, or are they just happening to do it, or you're just managing them through it? Mm-hmm. And you really see a different look in the eye when you get that.
Yeah, absolutely. And nothing like I say, not sitting on them and just being on the ground, you're already taking away a lot of the controls that you might have, especially as an educated rider. You know, we can fix things up a lot. So just being on the ground with one line, you're seeing more of the truth. And then at liberty also, you really see the truth because you know if they even want to be there or not.
Yeah.
Which is hugely humbling and valuable.
I'm just thinking how lucky we are that my first experience of seeing that was with Jonathan and yours was with David, because I think a lot of people that might be interested and they don't have a good first experience, I think it can turn them off for a long time.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, when you say the word natural horsemanship, there's a lot of pictures that people get in their brain. On the same note, when you say the word dressage, there's a lot of pictures.
Yeah, I mean, dressage or natural horsemanship, like probably almost anything, can be done well or it can be done poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I immersed and decided to like, okay, let me go spend more time in this camp, there were a lot of things that I looked at and said, well, that's not really my ultimate picture, but I still, there were so many things of that made me think, I don't know how to do that. Like, how are they getting the horse to connect like that? Like, so I think there's probably, you've experienced this too with all your studies of, you don't have to buy in completely, but you can still see like this person is doing something. It has a quality that they're achieving. How do I do that? Even if I don't ultimately want to cut cows or, you know, ultimately I want my horse in a slightly different posture, you know, have different qualities, but you can still appreciate the things that are working.
I totally agree. I love that idea of taking something away from it that's going to help you. And I think sometimes when people go into something and they feel like they have to buy in completely or not at all, I think it can work against you. Natural horsemanship is one thing that I've taken the things that I've liked from different people and different programs and systems. Same thing with clicker training. You know, there's some people that are sort of fundamentalists about it and they don't want to use any other way of training their horse, and everything is with a clicker and with food. But I love using a clicker and food, but I don't use it in every situation. I don't even use it in most situations, but I have fun using it, and I certainly use it in certain situations with certain horses and in certain places, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Actually, that's something I was going to ask you about. In this book, starting in the middle, at one point you say that you're pretty sure the main cause of stress in horses is confusion.
Would you agree with that?
I would. I think, you know, and I often say, like, just imagine horses have to figure out what means something and what doesn't, right? You shift your weight to adjust your stirrup, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But a leg yield or, you know, this very precise movements for lateral work, oh, that does mean something. And I think so many horses are going through life going, I'm not sure, I'll kind of hedge my bets. And then some horses get anxious in that circumstance and some horses shut down in that circumstance.
You know, what's really interesting is when I first put that in the book, I had a couple people, including one of my editors, sort of push back against that and say, what about all these other, you know, bad things in a horse's life, like using a whip too much or not getting adequate food or nutrition? And I, you know, and they listed kind of all these things. I was like, that, you know, that's fair. I agree with you on all those things, but on a day-to-day basis, you know, what I see when I go to most horse shows or I teach most clinics is this, just the, that's what I see is the single biggest source of stress is confusion. It's not underusing or overusing the whip. It's not that they're not getting enough hay or
maybe
grain.
They're confused and that's why you're needing to overuse the whip.
All those other things have a valid point, but I just, I see a lot of horses that are going through the motions and trying to figure it out. And just like that example you gave at the beginning with your horse, you're playing friendly game and the horse is just very quietly inching forward. And it's not a dramatic thing that your horse was doing, but it's just your horse in the way he knows how, letting you know that he's feeling a little stress. Yeah. He doesn't understand what's going on.
No, I very much agree with that. And of course, you can always find moments like, no, that horse has pain. It's like, yes, there's always going to be something, but it's a valuable premise to go on, because the worst thing that'll happen if you entertain that idea is you'll bring more clarity where it wasn't even needed, which is going to be a good thing.
Have you ever tried these simulations? You know, the first person that really introduced them to me was Linda Pirelli, but then I've done other things with tabletop games, playing Portal, where you train other people through clicker training, and different simulations where you train another person, and you train that person where you can't use English and you can't use mimicry. So you're really trying to set it up almost as if they're a horse. And even with other people who are very intelligent, you know, for the most part, they get confused. They get stressed. And a lot of times, even when you have one person training another that are two very smart people, you'll have it, you know, sometimes with certain people, one person will want to stop, the other person will want to quit. One person will get frustrated. And that's with two people that were brought up, you know, with a similar language and a similar culture, and even they can't figure it out. You can imagine how hard it is for the horses.
Absolutely. I saw a simulation once where it was like the opposite of clicker training. People were given like an empty water bottle and it was like, just smack them with it every time they get it wrong. It's like that brought out some emotions really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, 'cause it's just like wrong, 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 wrong. And so many people just stopped.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, I'm not playing this. I'm not going to move.
Yeah. A couple times with kids, I've let it go maybe a little longer than I should have. And I've seen the kids, you know, get a little bit, probably too violent with those sticks or with those bottles when they're playing that game. So now I stop it a little earlier and try to have a little conversation about it.
Yeah. We humans put something in our hands and we're going to use it. So in the same sort of few sentences where you're talking about the cause of stress is confusion, you bring up clicker training.
Yeah.
So, and you just did now again. So, I'm going to assume that you feel like clicker training, which I guess is just positive reinforcement, so is a source of bringing clarity. Is that how you would use it
now? Yeah, I think that's really nice how you said that, because when we talk about positive reinforcement, we're talking about what motivates the horse, really. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of the conversation, is what is motivating them to do this. And we talked about confusion being a big source of stress, and I think the understanding, when a horse understands something, when a horse has clarity, I think that is a motivator for them. I think they want to get rid of the stress and they want to understand. And I would argue that in a lot of cases when I've used clicker training, yes, I'm using the click and the food, but I would say the food ends up being less of a motivator than the clarity itself that the food brings. So you click and you treat and the horse starts to go, oh, that's what you want. And is that going like, oh, that's what you want, that is actually the bigger, more important motivator?
Yeah. And this is where I think it's so fun to talk to you, because I don't think there's many people who train sort of dressage and jumping and incorporate clicker training the way you and I do. So this is the selfish part of the conversation, because I'm like, we want to get into this. I agree. And I'll use positive reinforcement sometimes just for games. Like, I have my silly horse tricks and it's a big part of their life. Like, they love it. They're like, oh, we're gonna do this thing, and they get excited, and I'm noticing, I'm like, wow, they get really excited with this stuff. Like, they really want to do it. They also can learn from me of like the happy voice, the voice of like, yes, Right. So I don't use a clicker. I just use my voice, but I'm very careful to have like a very specific terminal bridge, you know, because that always ends things. And we'll talk about that stopping of movement in a minute. But then I'll also incorporate it. So through that, I've seen the value of having undeniable success and the horse knowing like the foot is in the tub. Nailed it. There is no confusion.
Yeah, it's
the
just
foot's in the tub.
Black and white, and they know they're successful.
I got it.
And there's clarity.
Pay me, you know. And but that then pairing the emotion of me going, yes, like then that's it. And then, yeah, okay, now we get a cookie too. So I totally agree that they get into the success of it. And then in ride, then I kind of was doing my normal riding, but I find I will bring in the positive reinforcement and the click or the terminal bridge in moments where I feel like they're not really getting it. They're not getting the piece that I want. So in the middle, I've used it to tune up haunches ins.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's all this stuff going on and then, you know, good right at that precise moment. And that makes them go, wait a minute, what did I just do?
Yes.
What did I just do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's this part. And then it will stop the movement for a moment. And I wanted to read, let me see if I can find this.
Well, while you're looking for it, first, thank you for reading through it and having it and talking about it on this podcast. And for those of you that, while she's looking for it, don't know, this book is called Starting in the Middle, and it's about my preparation for Road to the Horse 2024. You know, I spent a year preparing for that. And, right at the moment where I decided I was invited to do it and I decided I was going to do it, right at that moment, I started taking notes. And I'm not the kind of person that, you know, keeps a journal or writes notes every day. But when I've got a project like this in mind, it really helps me keep track of where I'm at and clarify my thoughts. And so I decided to take notes and I decided to write the book. And so all the way through, you know, these notes and these chapters are almost seemed, you know, they're almost written in real time about what I was going through. In the process of getting ready for Road to the Horse.
Very cool. Yeah. And I loved reading this. all right. So in the part with clicker training, you know, how valuable it is and the rewards and the clarity. But then you say, but clicker training also missed something. It missed allowing the horse to go forward out of innate heart and desire. So, and that's, I think, one of the points where people are doing sport with horses can get stuck because there's an inherent, like you stop things and then you give the reward and that can be really frustrating. So I'm just sort of curious now after, you know, learning it and using it. And so now in your normal sort of training life, like, have you played with how to blend that and be able to keep that movement and use the movement and also incorporate some clicker training?
Yeah, I think a little, well, first of all, let me back up by saying just in general, clicker training is something that I think every animal trainer should learn how to do. Even if you never use it again with your animal, your dog, your cat, your horse, even if you never ever use your clicker or your food again, I think it's something that the process of learning that is something that's going to be valuable to you. And I think the reason for that is because my experience, I've done a number of these clinics, clicker training clinics, and with people, with dogs, with horses, with chickens, you know, with in different situations, is that really probably, I would say close to 99% of what I learned when I was learning about positive reinforcement, I could also apply to negative reinforcement. And I think two big things that I really took away from these clicker training seminars and clinics is it creates a puzzle that it becomes fun for you and the animal to solve. And the second thing is that there's really no force. You're waiting. You're either setting up a situation. What you're doing is you're setting up a situation where the right thing is likely to happen. And then you're rewarding it. And so there's no chance of continuing on and the horse not really understanding what you want. It has to be broken down into many little pieces. You have to keep letting the horse know they're right. You have to keep making it clear. Otherwise, there's no progression, because you can't just have a bigger bit or have a stronger rope or have whatever, because you really are waiting for the horse to offer the thing you want. And that idea, those big picture ideas, and also the little picture ideas of the timing that you learn and stuff like that, you know, those are the things that I now take back to every horse. And a great example is Road to the Horse. In the first few minutes there, when you're trying to, create a connection with the horse in the round pen, with a horse that's most likely looking to the outside of the round pen, often putting their neck over the top of the round pen, often calling to the other horses that are in the other round pens or back in the holding pen outside of the arena. In those moments, and you're trying to get the horse to look at you and think about you, if you get a rope on that horse too soon, it's going to often work against you, because you're going to start making something happen. Whereas I had just come off of chicken camp, where we're training chickens through clicker training, when I got to Road to the Horse, and it was very clear in my mind that I wanted to teach this in a step-by-step process, where I'm looking for, if I want to get 100% better, it wasn't enough to look for 101% improvements. It was like I was wanting 1,000.1% improvements, so that every step became clearer. And actually, that's probably one of the biggest sort of really... I don't know if I even realized it at the time, but in Road to the Horse, everything is on a fast timeline. You've got 3 days, 4 hours over 3 days to essentially get a horse going walk, trot, canter, under saddle. And you would think, most people would think that I skipped more steps than normal in those 3 days than I would at home. But what I actually learned to do in that year of preparation was to have more smaller steps. And I would say in Road to the Horse, I actually had more steps than I normally do. Maybe I didn't spend as much time at each step, but I was really trying to go with every tiny incremental improvement and check that, and then go to another tiny incremental improvement and really be aware of having a little break and then the next 1%, and then take a little break and the next 0.1%. And so to get back to your original question, it's really the concepts that I take to every horse. In terms of the actual clicker and food, I would say I use food now maybe in 10 or 20% of my training. I very rarely use the clicker except when I've got a sort of unique case with a horse or a person. More often I'm just using my voice. And for me, I use yes, the word yes as a keep going bridge, and good as a terminal bridge. Mm-hmm. And I just try to be consistent with that. And sometimes I'll catch myself not being consistent, and I just sort of remind myself, and I just think, I just think the more consistent I can be, the horse, the faster the horse will learn.
Yeah. Really, really cool. I was going to ask you about how is life after chicken camp? I think whenever it's so helpful to think about how we do horse training, and think about using a different species, because how ridiculous would it be to put a rope on a chicken? Or yes. Spur a dolphin, or, and I was reading Jennifer Zelig's and got a chance to watch her work with her sea lions. And it just, those, like you said, those thin slices,
absolutely,
those little moments that make such a big difference and open the doorway, and how quickly we in the horse world put a halter on and just make it happen. And horses are so compliant.
And then all of a sudden, as soon as we get the halter on, as soon as we get the bit on, you still can thin slice, but it's just very easy to start thick slicing.
Yeah.
It's just without even realizing it, you can just start to be looking for, you just can start to get greedy because you can make it happen.
Well, and I've been watching you in Road to the Horse, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Taking that time in the beginning, I mean, the self-control under that timer to wait until the horse was ready to make that connection. I mean, that's impressive to not just, get it done. And I could see probably a fraction of what was really happening, but it was that takes a lot. That's impressive.
Yeah, it definitely took you know, watching, it took a lot of preparation in order to create that self-discipline in myself. It took a lot of watching previous years. It took a lot of practicing at home, similar timelines. It took, you know, having the team around me where we discussed it and discussed what the priorities were for each given day and each given half an hour slot within that day. And I think probably more than anything, it took creating a set of principles that were more important than the results. And fortunately for me, by following the principles, the results happened. And I think that's often the case, although not always the case. Yeah. Sometimes you really have to make that decision to put the principles ahead of the results.
Yeah. So in talking about Road to the Horse, I'm going to bring up the elephant in the room, because listeners of this podcast know that I kind of don't really like the whole premise of Road to the Horse. As far as just set up, like, here's something I think I'll put this horse through. And knowing, you know, I do what I joke is the meandering path to the horse. Like, that's what we do around here.
Yeah.
But also I can hold that thought, and I can also be incredibly impressed by the skill it takes to do that. And the only times that I've watched Road to the Horse was when somebody that I knew and I respected was in it. Jonathan Field, Glenn Stewart, and then you. Those are the times I've watched Road to the Horse. And knowing what's in the heart of those people and knowing enough about you, I remember thinking, like, what's he doing? Like, he's one of the nice horsemen. So I just found it really interesting to watch you through the process and then read the book. So while I have you here as somebody I know enough to know you really seem to care about the horses and care about the experience and care about the relationship. And can you talk me through a little bit, like, and did you have any conflicting thoughts around doing this, and how did you reconcile them? And I guess I want to say out the top, I feel like whatever you did worked really well, because your results were, like, I could watch, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I could watch you do it.
Yeah.
And not feel like I wanted to go rescue the horse.
Yeah.
So that's my compliment to you.
Thank you.
I watched even without blocking my eyes, and it's impressive, even if it's not something I would ever volunteer a horse to go do.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your, and thank you for letting me just say that out loud. How did you?
Well, I think what you just said is the most important part of horsemanship to me, what you just said, which is that you can hold two different thoughts, and that you can feel something about a method or a way or a person, and yet you can still be open-minded to how they're doing it differently or having a conversation with them. And I really tried hard to also have that mindset in my preparation. You know, I tried to have conversations with people that put a lot more pressure on horses than I do and go a lot faster than me. And I also tried to have conversations with people that put a lot less pressure on horses than me and go a lot slower than me. And I've tried to constantly remind myself, if I ever felt myself getting a brace about it, is just that there's different ways to do things. And I don't feel like I hold the truth or the right way, but that I'm trying to be curious about what other people are doing and how they're doing it, and trying to learn more, you know, just like we spoke about at the very beginning, is trying to learn different pieces that are going to help me and find my authentic way of working with horses. I remember reading a book ages ago. I think it's called Work Hard, Be Nice, or maybe Work Hard, Be Kind. And it's about teachers of children. And they started a program called the KIPP program, K-I-P-P. And I think it's the Knowledge is Power program. And these two teachers were excellent teachers and very charismatic. And they developed a very particular way of teaching kids. And they helped a lot of kids from less affluent areas and rates where high school graduation rates were very, very low. And they ended up being very, very successful teachers, these two people. And then they started a program. And they started to teach other teachers to teach the way that they taught. And I don't know if you can guess what happened, but the other teachers weren't as successful. And so what they realized as they went along is that all good teachers have their own sort of superpower. Some teachers are good at telling stories. Some teachers are good at singing. Some teachers are good at drama. Some teachers are good at playing sports. Some teachers inspire. Some teachers are more physical with a hug or a pat. Some teachers are good listeners. Some teachers get really excited about science. You know, everybody has their own kind of way of relating to the kids. And I think it's the same with horses. I think at the very beginning, we want to maybe copy other people when we're just learning. But as we get to be, you know, professionals in our own right, as you've been doing horses for 10 years or 20 years, and you start to think about developing your own way of doing things, I think that's exactly what it's got to be, is it's got to be your own way. And the first time I watched Road to the Horse was in 2012. And it was right when I was also getting interested in just the concept of starting horses. At that point, I think maybe I hadn't started any horses at all, or maybe I'd helped Bruce Logan start a couple of horses in Texas. And I was getting interested in that. And the first thing that I realized was that by having three or four people start a horse in a round pen on television in this way, it was very easy for me to watch a lot of colt starting on a condensed timeline. So I was learning a lot from that. The second thing that I realized was that I actually learned more when they made mistakes or went too fast than when they did the right thing and made it look easy and smooth. And so in a way, you know, them making that mistake prevented me from making that mistake with one or five or 10 horses. I was able to learn from that and not make some of those same mistakes myself. The other thing that I really learned from watching it is how important someone's just way of being around horses is. You know, their character, their relaxation, their thoughtfulness. You know, it reminds me of that first time I saw Jonathan Fields, just that warmth and that curiosity and that openness that he has about the situation. And so I followed Road to the Horse from 2012 on. And I, you know, with my eventing, I appreciate competing, and I feel like it pushes me and it takes it out of my comfort zone, and it scares me. And I had the idea of competing in it for a long time, and I wrote some letters to the organizers. And right about the time that I got invited was right about the time where I started to think, maybe I don't want to do this.
Maybe
I don't need to have this in my life. Maybe I'm ready to have my kids and move on to the next thing. And, you know, I had the idea of writing a book about liberty, and that was going to be my project.
Isn't the universe cute?
Yeah. Sometimes. And I was just like, you know, I'd just sort of come to peace with this idea that maybe I don't want to or need to do this competition. And right about then is when I got invited to do it.
That's hilarious.
And, you know, the first thing that kind of went through my mind when they invited me is all the fears that I had about doing it. You know, I had fears about the process itself, you know, the first ride, the first saddling, would I even be able to catch the horse? I had fears about what it would look like in front of a crowd or on social media. You know, 100% of the training is in front of the crowd. I had fears about my ability to actually even complete the thing on that kind of timeline. And I had fears about, you know, is this the right thing to do? Is this an ethical competition to take a part of? So should colt starting be on a timeline? Should it be a competition? And so all these things were at the surface. And when I really kind of sat with it, I still, despite all those fears, I just realized, like, at the sort of the pit of my stomach, there's almost like this little flame that still was like, you know, actually you do want to do this. I do want to do this. And so despite all these fears around me, and despite some people that are very close to me that didn't think it was a good idea, you know, Warwick Schiller, David O'Connor, my dad was there in 2023, and he said he didn't think it was a good idea. So despite all these fears and despite all these other things, I thought, this is something that I actually want to do. And I think I can do this my way. I don't think I need to do this the way anybody else has ever done it before. I think I can give myself permission to stop if at any point I feel like I need to stop. And right when I really decided I was going to do it, the very first thing I did in the first couple of weeks afterwards was I drew up a list of 10 principles. And I said, I'm going to follow these principles. And it's not about winning. It's about following these principles and to learn from the experience. And afterwards, you know, when it was all done, you know, I've had some people that I've read the principles to, and they asked me, did you follow all the principles? And the answer to that is no, I made mistakes, but I tried to follow all the principles and I tried to stay present. And I think it's inevitable that people make mistakes, but I constantly tried to do the right thing. And I think that's all you can really ask from somebody, is to keep trying to do the right thing. And you make mistakes, but you keep trying and learning from the experience.
Yeah, I think the principles is the key. And, you know, I work with students from all over the place who often have other instructors that they work with. And they often ask me, like, can this work? You know, can I still take lessons with this trainer? And I said, it depends on if our principles match.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that can work and so many ways that can work. And you can get something from everyone. Where the problems start is when things are not going well, what decisions are made.
Have you had the principles before you get to that point? Because what you don't want to do is wait till something's going wrong. And then having to think about what are my principles and what are my goals.
Right.
But to have the principles beforehand so that when you get into trouble, you already have an idea of what direction.
And you can see the direction of the trouble. You can see it when it starts to approach.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Did you have principles when you grew up with riding, or was there a certain moment in your life where you started to think about this idea of principles?
I think I did in my heart, in that I knew some things just didn't feel good. And there were some things that even that I was told to do that I knew didn't feel right. I wouldn't have described them as principles, but I know now that's what they were.
Yeah.
The lines that I didn't want to cross and that I saw other people crossing, it just didn't feel good. And I think that's, you know, principle is so much part of your being. You can try different principles on, but the ones that you really keep are the ones that align on the inside. So it wasn't when I started doing stuff with the Pirellis, you know, he had them written out
in his book, like, and on his wall.
And so then when I wrote my book, you know, I realized I had principles, and now I was thinking much more like, I need to figure out how to explain what I'm doing. And so that's when I was more conscious of the role of principles as sort of guide you, and also as some guardrails. I wanted to ask you also, because you have learned from so many people, and you said, you know, people who go faster than you and stronger than you and slower and softer. How in the moment of Road to the Horse, how much were these things bouncing around? Or had you already started to make them your own in that moment? Because I could see that. I mean, what a gift to have all of that, those resources. But then, you know, how do you use them? Was it paralysis by analysis at times? Or were you able to kind of like let that go and just trust your instincts in those moments?
I sort of, when you say paralysis by analysis, I sort of anticipated that does happen to me, where I start thinking about what my coach is saying, or what somebody said to me the day before, or what I just read, and I sort of get frozen with indecision. And that definitely does happen to me. And so I made a decision, you know, as I was leading up to it, where I would take, you know, all these 6, 7, 8 months to learn as much as I could from other people. But very specifically, the last 4 weeks, the last month, I was going to try to stop learning from other people, you know, stop going to clinics, stop having coaches' voices in my ear, and just really take everything I'd learned and sort of incorporate it into my way of doing things, so I could be as present as possible in the round pen. And so I had a very particular plan around that, and it did work really well. I mean, I think one of the greatest gifts that I got from Road to the Horse is I really don't think there's another time in my life where for 4 hours over 3 days at any point ever in my life, I have been that present and that in the moment. I mean, I was so nervous. I was so prepared as well. that it's just like kind of how you see in these movies where everything else just kind of blurs away and it's just really just me and the horse. And we're just there with each other and everything else kind of blurs away. And I didn't hear a lot of voices in my head and time kind of almost just seemed to slow down at moments. And, you know, that's a pretty special feeling. And that's something that, that animals give us. And I think that's also something that sometimes competition gives us.
Yeah. That's amazing you could do that because, you know, part of, you know, in reading the book, and it's amazing how much you have, what a dedicated student you are and just to be open to all these different things. But I started thinking like, oh my gosh, how is he going to keep track of all this in your head? So that's really cool that you had a plan for that and that you were able to, yeah, I think we get more present sometimes in times of danger and crisis.
Yeah.
And it just, you were able to get it to focus you and not.
Yeah. And I don't know if I would recommend that approach for everybody, especially for somebody that's at the beginning of their horsemanship journey. Yeah. You know, I see somebody that's learning horsemanship right at the beginning and they're bouncing around from instructor to clinician to horse expo and they're reading this book and they're following that podcast. And I think at the beginning, especially, that can be confusing. Mm-hmm. But I think as you get further along and you kind of have a set kind of fundamental principles and a base to come back to, I think then it becomes easier and easier to branch out without getting too confused. I feel very lucky that when I was growing up, my parents were sort of my rock for learning. They did, you know, they taught me a lot about the basics of dressage and riding and jumping, but they also encouraged me to go out and take clinics with other sort of jumping clinicians and stuff like that. And sometimes they would give contradictory advice, but I always had that ability to go back to my dad or back to my mom and say, you know, how do you feel about this? Or how does this fit into your program or the way that you do things? And I think if you don't have that, you know, that instructor or that parent or that foundation within yourself, I think it could be very confusing at the beginning.
I agree. And I think there's a lot with the internet and everything so accessible. I also was lucky that I started out with, you know, there wasn't internet to distract me. So I had a trainer and I watched her train Grand Prix horse after Grand Prix horse. And I just did, you know, so I was led through this system. And I think just the ability to experience having a system, seeing it work, seeing one, and I took one horse from zero to upper levels the first time I trained dressage. So like to see that like, oh, this is the normal weird path it goes on is such a gift. And then you're like, okay, I get how systems work. I get the natural ebb and flow of that. And then you can sprinkle in. So, but it's hard for students.
I think the other thing that probably gave you is seeing something work over months and years.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when you go to a clinic, even a 3 or 4 or 5 day clinic, even a 10 day clinic, most of the times the instructor is going to pick something to help you with that they can fix or improve in 10 days or in 2 days or in 3 days. Whereas not everything with horses is like that. Some stuff takes months before you see the result that you're looking for. Yeah. And unless you're in that program or that system for a long period of time, I think it's easy to get caught up on the quick fixes and not realize that some stuff just takes a long time to develop, you know, a horse's brain or a horse's muscles or a horse's way of going.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in this world of marketing, a lot of trainers do that. They show the breakthrough moment, the big commotion, and then it changed. And I try to let people know, like, it's not training shouldn't be about these breakthroughs. It's just put a quarter in the bank, put another quarter in the bank. And then, you know, and I always tell my students, like, just video yourself now and then take out that video 3 months from now. Like, and you should feel like nothing's changed. And then you look back and go, oh my God, it's so much better. You know, that if you can train without finding big problems, like, and that's when I started my horse Core, I was really conscious. Like I wanted as much as possible, not create any problems. And so much training is asking too hard a question.
Yeah.
And you create a problem and then you get to be the hero and fix the problem. But my goal was like, let's try to not create as many problems as possible. So you're 2-time world champion colt starting Road to the Horse Champion. Would you do it again?
I'm first of all, I'm glad that they didn't invite me back a third year. I'm glad to not be going back. You know, there's just so much, it just added so much to my already busy life. You know, I've got two kids. My daughter is 3 and my son just turned 7. And then we got a farm at home and I've got some horses that I'm competing. And it's just a lot to kind of add on top of that. I think if they invite me back in the future in a few years, I really don't know. I think there's a chance I'll do it. And there's also a chance that I'll be involved with another project or another horse. And I'll feel like that other thing is more important. So I don't know.
Yeah. Fair enough. what do you feel like from Road to the Horse in this process how has that changed your normal training with like an event horse comes in for training or anything? Are you conscious of changes that it's made or?
Yeah, I don't think so much from the competition itself. I think, you know, in this book here that we've got in front of us, all the stuff that I did in the preparation has really changed a lot of the way that I do things. And I think learning to start horses is a hugely valuable skill for anything we do later on with horses. You know, knowing how to start a horse, I think some of the things you learn from that experience will help you with if you're doing Grand Prix dressage or Grand Prix show jumping or 3-day eventing or whatever it is that you're doing. I think some of those same ideas will translate.
Hey, I've got some great news for you. Registration for the Finding the Sweet Spot of Healthy Biomechanics program is now open at a special discounted price. And we only open it twice a year, so if you don't do it now, you're going to have to wait 6 months. That's half a year. Now, this is our most transformative and most highly supported program. It will forever change the way you think about how your horse moves and how you confidently improve it. You get 6 months of live weekly Q&A calls with my coaches and private coaching included. And that's along with lifetime access to all the training materials. Now, the vast majority of students surveyed rated this program a 5 out of 5. And they said that they would confidently and enthusiastically recommend it to their friends. And because of the unique exercises and concepts taught inside the program, it's appropriate for riders of all disciplines wanting to improve how their horse moves, even with no prior dressage experience. And it's also appropriate for even seasoned dressage riders looking for a more harmonious way to ride and train. You can find out all the information at dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot. And check it out now because registration closes for the semester on October 6th. It's dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot, SWEETSPOT. All right, now back to the pod.
One of the biggest things from chicken camp is the idea of rate of reinforcement. Mm-hmm. And I constantly think about that with the horses. And I also now think about it with people. And I now also think about it with myself. You know, when I'm learning something new myself or trying to figure something out, or, you know, the other day I was had a bit of time in a city where I was flying back here and I bought a book on magic just to play with on the plane. And I was learning how to shuffle a deck the way that magicians do it. And the idea of rate of reinforcement is just a really valuable thing to think about. What the rate of reinforcement is it's how often, you know, if you're using clicker training, it would be how often you click and treat. And if you're using, negative reinforcement with horses, it'd be how often you take the pressure off. It's basically letting the person know they're right. They're going in the right direction. They're doing a good job. It's like saying great or good, or you're doing it right.
And, I can imagine you on the plane and you hear like card shuffling and then you hear good job, Tick.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I do sometimes when I'm flying is I'll spend a little time on Duolingo. which is a language learning app. And that it's the same thing that does for you. It's just an app, you know, it's the computer system doing it. But every time you get something right, it'll like have this little buzz, or it'll give you gems or coins. Or it'll say, great job. Like, you learned 5 words today. And if you make a mistake, you make a ton of mistakes, it'll be like, great job, you fixed 6 mistakes today. Like, you're a great corrector, you know, you're correcting all these. And it's just constantly like reinforcing you in this way that feels good.
Yeah, that's awesome, because, you know, back to what we were talking about earlier, I really do believe horses are trying to figure out what the heck we're doing. I really believe that. And the more we can let them know when they're going in the right direction, let them know. I think they want us just to be happy. You know, they want us to be like, yeah, you know, that feeling, exhale from the predator, you know. And and if we can be more expressive and not wait, you know, how can we do that sooner and little steps along the way?
I'd like to share something I've been thinking about recently and trying to kind of find the right words for, and it's to do with consistency and how consistency relates to clarity. And I've got this mare who gets worried a lot. She gets worried when she hears sounds. She gets worried when she sees horses off in the distance. She gets worried about leaving the group. And there's just a lot of things, not usually anything I do. You know, if I lose my balance or I move my hands around, you know, she's not really nervous about that. She's looking off into the distance. And there's a lot of things that are going to cause her to want to stop and raise her head and look off, or maybe even spin and go the other way. And, you know, I've often thought it was important for a person to get to know their horse well enough that their horse was predictable to them. You know, they knew how their horse was going to react to things. And now, thinking with this mare, I almost think that if she can find me predictable, it's almost more important. Like, that she knows how I'm going to react. Like, if she stops, she knows what I'm going to do. If she goes to turn, she knows what I'm going to do. If she goes to raise her head, she knows what I'm going to do. If she stops, whatever, like if she does this, if she does that, she knows how I'm going to react to that. And she gets to find me predictable.
Yeah. So then at least you don't become another source of inconsistency and something to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great way to phrase it.
I think some horses can probably deal with that better than other horses, you know, but for some horses, having 10 different handlers, you know, at a boarding barn or something like that, where they've got multiple people leading them out, multiple people riding them, I think that can be pretty tough for some horses. I think some horses really struggle with that more than others.
Mm, yeah, I think you're onto something there for sure. Interesting. There's another thing you say in this book that I want to read. It says, I'm now concerned that each year as I study, I'll come to understand that I continue to know less and less. Months and years will pass, and one day I'll wake up and realize I'm at zero. I'll be starting horses, but I'll know nothing at all. I can so relate to that. And I feel like, you know, I'm at this age, I'm like, I should be at my most confident. And although, you know, I can show you pretty good evidence of my skills and what I know, but there's this like journey towards humbleness of realizing how much more there is to know, and how much I still need to know, and how much I feel like I'm just at the beginning. So I'm a little bit older than you. I'm sorry to say, Tick, in my experience, it's not going to get any better. But I think there's got to be something really beautiful and useful about that thought. So I just wanted to check in on you since writing that on page 8 of this book. How are you doing with that?
No, I feel this the same way. You know, there's a point maybe beginning in your journey where you start to feel like you know quite a bit, but constantly I am humbled by the way that a horse does something, a way that a person does something with a horse, or I take a dressage lesson, or I go in a clinic, or I see, I mean, it's just like so many examples, even just with people that we both know, like people like Jonathan, people like Linda, people like Glenn Stewart. And I see them doing something that I'm like, geez, I never would have thought of that. Or I don't know why you're doing it this way. And it's probably equally humbling and equally exciting.
Yeah.
you know, because then there's, you just constantly realize how much more there is to learn.
Yeah. And I think it, at the end of the day, do I want to wake up going, I know everything, yeah, you know, that'd be so boring.
Yeah.
So that's what I keep trying to tell myself, is the beautiful piece in that is just, there's so much newness and so much more to see. And I do feel like I'm getting into layers that I didn't even know existed, as far as just the relationship and the nuance. And yeah, so that's my positive twist on that sort of mean trick from the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
So what's next for you? Any new goals on the horizon? New adventures? Are you looking forward to just a more normal year? Whatever that means.
Yeah, this year is going to be a more normal year. You know, my original idea before getting invited to Road to the Horse was to do a book about liberty training and to really investigate, you know, different liberty trainers around the United States and around the world and look at some of the different ways that they teach that and introduce that. And so I think that's still something that could be on the horizon at some point. Also, I've got a really nice Lemaire I was just talking about. You know, I've had her for a little over a year and a half now, and I'm competing with her in eventing, and I'm going to be competing her throughout the winter. You know, so that's a little bit more kind of run of the mill for me. I've been eventing a lot over the past 15 years, but that's also exciting for me. And she's probably the first horse that at least comes to mind right now that is talented at all three phases.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, a lot of times with horses, and I do it less and less, but a lot of times with horses, it feels like sometimes you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. You know, it's the same thing that you could maybe see with a dog. Somebody gets a border collie and they live in an apartment in New York City. And it's like horses have different strengths and weaknesses, you know, based on the breed, but also especially just based on the individual. And it's really a lot more fun when you're trying to do something with a horse that they're mentally and physically good at, you know.
That's exciting.
And so you know, there's still a lot of stuff that worries her, but when she gets in the ring, you know, it's something that mentally and physically I think is easy for her, and that I think she's starting to enjoy. And so I'm really excited about her development.
That is exciting. Wow, awesome. Well, where can people learn more about you? Or you've got two books.
Yeah, I mean, I hopefully the starting point for anybody that's interested is they'll get a copy of this book called Starting in the Middle. It's published by Trafalgar Square Books. And, you know, I would always try to ask first at your local bookstore or tack shop. But of course, for many people, the easiest place to get it is off of Amazon. And that's fine, too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to drive down the road and sit with me here today.
Thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to spending some more time together. And there's a rumor that David Litchman will be back out here at some point, and so maybe we can
awesome.
Get together
absolutely
for that as well.
Let's do it. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse. Move in harmony and enjoy the process.